Welcome to VFN TV and the daily VFN radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. That's L-I-G-H-T, light, with your host, Greg Lancaster.
Welcome to VFN TV. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and joining me just a moment is Steve Kalaseski. Who would have ever thought this day would come? But when you study history, it's come again and again. What is it? It's where people don't want to work. People are thinking that government can take care of them. But it wasn't until around 1900s when President Woodrow Wilson thought that we should actually kick in this huge government and begin this whole process called, a lot of people are calling it progressive, but the big thing was where government was taking the place of the church. Well, now we're facing a big question, and we don't even know it. They used to teach in schools. You could not even graduate from high school in America unless you took AVC. That was Americanism versus communism. Now people don't even know what it means. And we're starting to see people take down the Ten Commandments and from courthouses and schools and all these different places around America. It's all tied together, and we're going to find out how that actually happens. But first, let's look at and educate ourselves. What is socialism? You have capitalism, you have socialism, and you have communism, and you have Marxism. You have the isms. We talked about that before on the program. But let's just take a look at the definition of socialism so we know what we're talking about today. And we're trying to get a biblical perspective. What does the scripture say about it? Not necessarily what men think about it, but what does God think about the byproducts of socialism? Let's take a look at that. Socialism is any various economic or political theories advocating collective or governmental ownership or administration that meet the means of a product or production of a product or good. You no longer own its fruits or the fruits of your labor or possess the ownership of the property. Basically, it's saying you don't own anything anymore. You don't own anything anymore. If you go to China, think about this, that big country of China, guess what? Nobody owns any property in China but the government. Now, they just have begun starting to let some of their political, in America we'd say cronies, people that were tight with the leadership, own property. But it's a very unique thing, which means this. You could have a business, your family could have a business for 100 years in China, and all of a sudden the government decides they want that piece of property. They just push your house down, push your business down because it's their property. That's communism. That's socialism. And you don't own the fruit of your labors. They're saying, listen, just stack up everything that you earn and put it in a particular pile and we'll distribute it. Now, we call that slavery, right? If you work and you give all your money to the master, the government, and they distribute it, we would call it slavery. They're calling it socialism. So no matter how hard you work, think about it, no matter how hard you work, you do not make any more. And how little you work, you don't make any less. And what that tends to do, it creates in people the desire not to work. That's why Venezuela, we've been talking to you about Venezuela and watching people, you know, go from a food truck and a whole month's worth of wages does not buy 2 days worth of groceries. It's because of socialism. Eventually, everybody's going to say, if I earn an A in the class and he earns an F, and I always get a C because of his F, people are going to quit earning A's. And eventually, everybody's making an F. And that's what socialism does. It doesn't work. It's never worked. And it's actually a punishment on a society because it eventually takes you to your knees. And then you hear about Marxism. Let's look at the definition of Marxism. It's a stage of society in the Marxist theory, transitional between capitalism and communism, and distinguished by unequal distribution of goods and pay according to the work that you've done. So when you hear about Marxism, that you're really hearing with Marxism is, it's just a doorway to get to communism. Socialism and Marxism is just like, we're trying to get you to the place where government is totally in control. And remember, America was formed because we didn't want to be under a king anymore, an earthly king. But we did say we wanted to be under God, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. But if we choose not to be under God, like Israel did, the Tale of Two Kings, we've talked about that before. Israel was under God. Everything was okay. You had the God form of government. You had apostles and prophets. You had Samuel. And then all of a sudden they said, listen, we've been looking across the pond and we saw Europe and we saw these other countries. And we want a king. They didn't say Europe, obviously, but I'm kind of using that as an example. They said, we want a socialistic government like they have. We want a king like them. And God gave it to him. If we ask for socialism, God's going to give it to us. Don't think he's not going to give it to us. But he'll warn us first. And that's what this program is. We're going to be able to understand, you know, what socialism is, what is a biblical perspective of it. As a matter of fact, right now we have Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann and David Barton of Wall Builders is going to break it down. Let's take a look at what God has to say through his word by this congresswoman and this very wise man who really understands the Constitution and biblical foundational principles. Take a look.
Welcome to Foundations of Freedom, where we look at our shared national heritage and we see things that we've just never been taught in this generation. Joining me today is Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. Michelle is a federal tax attorney. She's a very successful businesswoman. She's also a very successful mom. I mean, raised 5 of her own kids and 23 foster kids. She's also a member of Congress, and she sits on the House Intelligence Committee, and that's the one in charge of all of our national secrets. So she really has a very important post. Michelle, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. This is really an honor for me to be able to be here. I love what we're going to be talking about today. It has to do with what the Bible says about competition and how that provides for freedom for all of us. And I know there's a question that I've heard over and over, and I know you've heard a lot. Let's go to our very first question.
A lot of Christians complain about socialism. The Bible seems to support it. Acts 2 said all Christians held everything in common. So isn't socialism a biblical concept?
So is that true? Socialism is a Christian concept?
Let's go to the Bible verse we're talking about. It's Acts 2, 41 through 45, and I'll just read it. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teachings and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. That sounds fairly
sounds like a utopia, kind of a perfect environment. Everybody made sure everybody got what they needed. It all sounds like love, peace, joy, and happiness. And what do you think?
The problem is that is not a government. That's a voluntary association of folks who got together to do something, and that's great. You have that with kibbutzes in Israel. And if they want to do that, that's fine. But that's not what the government does, and it's not even what the church did. Because there in the book of Acts, it said they sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. So it seems like that all their possessions belong to everybody. But then you find out Ananias and Sapphira, they sold their property and they only gave part of it. And when Peter confronted them over only having given part of it, it's interesting what he said. He said, "Didn't your property belong to you before it was sold? And after it was sold, wasn't the money at your disposal?"
So it didn't belong to the church. It didn't belong to the government.
It belonged to them. That's not socialism.
Yeah.
If it's in my control and if I can do what I want with it after I sell it, that's not socialism. And by the way, here's an old sermon. I mean, this is from back in the day. This is a sermon whacking socialism back in the 1800s. Here's one in the 1900s that was whacking socialism. So this has been a topic for a lot of time. And there's a lot of people who say, oh, the Bible is for socialism. And that's not true. And even our own American experience. Let me pull up a really big picture here. Let's take this picture. You see this on a regular basis. This is
I see it every day at the Capitol. It's in the rotunda.
This is the embarkation of the pilgrims. As they're leaving Holland to go to England and then on to America, they had the Acts mentality. Because you got to understand, the pilgrims were one congregation. The pastor here has one congregation. He put half of them on one ship. Half are going to come later on the second ship. Well, the half that eventually came over in the Mayflower, he died before the second half came. The second half never arrived. So we're talking about one congregation here as the pilgrims. And their commitment is we're going to help one another. We're going to look after one another. Same thing.
All for one, one for all.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they get here, and instead of arriving in Virginia where they thought they were going, they land in Massachusetts, way off course. Now, that was providential. It was a good thing because they started a new government. But landing as they did in December in Massachusetts, having no housing, no lodging, you're in the middle of a New England winter where you're having to chop firewood at an incredible rate just to stay warm. You're having to chop logs to build cabins for everybody. And I'm looking around, and I don't think that little gal's going to be able to do just a whole lot. You know, I don't think that she will do much. I don't think that he will do much. He's probably too old
this
to do
one.
Just a whole lot. There's
this
children
one.
There,
children.
Another lady there, another lady there.
Mm-hmm.
You got some white hairs. Now, he looks pretty rugged. He might can do something, and he looks like he might be pretty rugged. And so we're now faced with maybe 1/4 of these guys having to produce for everybody. And after a few weeks of chopping wood every day and going out and finding what you can, I have figured out that, you know, if I call in sick today, I still get the same amount. Everybody's going to share with me whether I do anything or not.
And so human nature prevails.
That's human nature, yeah. And that's the problem they had. And so Governor William Bradford talked about how that they came to the point of non-productivity because there was no incentive for them. If I work harder than anybody else, I don't get more. If I don't work at all, I get the same amount.
And half died
and
that
half
winter.
Died.
They went from 102 down to 51.
To 51.
It was misery. And to try and figure this out, but it's that whole idea, again, of socialism versus you got to produce for yourself.
And that's what they found. They found two Bible verses that set them in a different direction. In 1 Timothy 5:8, it says, if you don't provide for your own household, you're worse than an infidel and denied the faith. Whoa, time out. We're providing for everybody else's house. Our own household? So they have a town meeting, and they divide up the property. And by the way, they bought property from the Indians at the price set by the Indians. One of the longest-lasting treaties in American history. It's when the Pilgrims and Indians had great relations with the Indians.
That's an excellent point, because the greatest example of race relations we had were these people, the Pilgrims, between themselves and the Indians.
And by the way, the king said, it's my charter, it's my land, you guys take what I give you. They got here and said, King doesn't know what he's talking about. This is private property. And so whether it be the Pilgrims of Massachusetts, whether it be the Puritans in Massachusetts Bay Colony, whether it be Connecticut, whether it be New Hampshire, whether it be any of the religious colonies, they all came and said, nah, we'll buy the land.
This is really important, because everyone assumes from what they've been taught that all of the white Europeans stole the land that they were on, because the king just declared it was his. When it wasn't his, it was belonging to the Indians. And that's a huge point.
Now, the secular people came in and said, get off our land. The king gave us our land. You Indians, get off it. The religious people
came in.
So isn't
that interesting?
It's very different.
The secular people said, hey, we're going to take what the king gave us, and then disregarded the Indians and their rights.
And these guys here had great relations because they understood equality. The Bible's created all many. As a matter of fact, the first load of slaves that came to America, we point to Virginia, Jamestown Colony. The second load of slaves came to these guys. They freed all the slaves and imprisoned all the slave owners. And they did so looking at Acts 17, where the Bible says we're all of one blood. They looked in Revelation 7.
And also 1 Timothy 1:8, right? Where you look at evildoers.
That's right.
And among that list of evildoers are slave traitors.
That's exactly right. And by the way, one of the documents we own several of these, but one of them is an Indian treaty, and they said, Indians, you set the price, you know what it's worth, we'll pay the price that you set for it. There wasn't the stealing from the Indians kind of stuff.
No, that's true. It isn't that all white settlers were good to American Indians. They weren't.
That's
but
right.
We also didn't
but
get the
religious guys.
The religious.
Were the Bible-oriented
and
guys.
Why?
Very different.
And why? It's because they took their cues from the Bible.
That's right.
And what the Bible taught them about private property and also just equality of men.
That's right.
Because it isn't just citizenship. God calls us in equality of treatment with each other. Male, female, whether you're Indian or whether you're European.
Jew or Greek.
It's equality. Quality of treatment.
Bible's
and again,
even.
Going back to this concept of socialism and this idea about holding things in common and competition, it's really interesting how the Pilgrims realized if we want to survive, not just be prosperous, but if we want to survive, we have to embrace a free market approach where each man puts his own labors out to be able to provide for himself.
Well, that was
and his family.
After they had the town meeting and divided up the land, they said, all right, everybody's got a piece of land now. 2 Thessalonians 3:10 says, if you don't work, you don't eat. Now you've got your own land, you go work it. Well, I've got an incentive to work really hard now. And socialism didn't work any better here than it did back in Acts, because you had Ananias and Sapphira that still had their own property. But Peter
said, we had a living laboratory.
We had a
living laboratory of a brand new country with the little bit more secular group that came over versus the religious group.
That's right.
Both tried to embrace socialism. Didn't work for either one.
One of them
was smart enough to get rid of it and actually embrace free markets. They tried to embrace free markets down in the more secular colony in Jamestown, but Jamestown just kind of couldn't make it. They removed themselves from Jamestown. They eventually moved up to Williamsburg and started a settlement there. But it really is a wonderful compare and contrast between the two, and also how the economics built up the societies versus tearing them down, because socialism was killing them.
Yeah, it was.
Now, that's what I think people need to get out of this, is that socialism was killing the civil society.
It was.
And we look at that today. Look at what nations who have embraced socialism, what's happened to those nations.
Doesn't work.
China rejected it. when Richard Nixon went to China and with Deng Xiaoping, and Deng Xiaoping opened up the Chinese society, he saw, hey, I think I'd like China to be prosperous. I think we're going to embrace a market economy. It's not free, but it's a market economy because he wanted economic growth. So as nations, including the United States, embrace socialistic philosophies and systems and bureaucracies, we're no different than any other nation. Then in those areas, then we go into decline as well. So we're not just set aside where we're going to be free of these consequences. If we embrace competition, we thrive. If we reject it and embrace socialism, we decline.
It's just so educational, isn't it? We're going to talk more about this, including how does socialism cause us to begin to become idle, which you can tell societies begin to fall. It's almost socialism, communism, Marxism is almost like God's judgment on a nation coming up under some sort of government or big government leadership. We can turn around. We're going to talk about that. And as we heard about the Pilgrims event today in the Rotunda, even though the government, many people in the government are denying the reality of the Pilgrims and what they did and how they came here, every day they have to pass the painting of the Pilgrims in the Rotunda. Isn't that amazing? Join us after the break.
We'll be right back.
I love to see crowds burn, but I know I can shape history if I can find just one. Anybody can burn in a crowd. I want to find someone that'll burn by themselves.
Did you know that 90% of boys and 70% of girls are exposed to pornography online? Meanwhile, 71% of kids say that they're hiding internet activity from their parents. In 56% of divorce cases today, a major contributing factor is one spouse's continued use of inappropriate content online. What are you doing to protect your family online? Covenant Eyes Internet Accountability monitors how the internet is used on your family's mobile devices and their computers. Each web page visited is rated similar to TV shows or video games, like T for teen or M for matures. And as a parent, you can receive weekly reports for your kids. Plus, you can invite your friends to receive reports for your internet activity, which enables you to enjoy the benefits of accountability and protection online as well. Sign up today.
The church needs to be leading the way in this conversation.
Where is the church?
The church is totally silent about race. We are ourselves dysfunctional in our ability. We're family, but we're a dysfunctional family because we cannot talk about the elephant in the middle of the room.
Right.
And until we do, then the people in the street are taking up the conversation. And I think that they are God's judgment on a silent church.
Oh.
Our role and responsibility is to really set the tone and direction of society and culture. I tell people all the time that the movement that was led by my father was a spiritual movement. It wasn't a civil rights movement. It impacted civil rights, but it was a spiritual movement, and its assignment was to civil rights.
You know, a lot of people want to abide with the Lord, but they just don't have a plan to do it. You can request that plan today at iabide.org.
Welcome back to VFN TV with your host, Greg Lancaster.
Welcome back. I just love Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann and David Barton. And if you don't yet have this entire series for your church, for your family. You need to get it now while it's gettable. But they have so many good things. We'll have it for you available at VFNTV.com. But we want to talk about one of the things that you're seeing take place is this amazing man who we know in history as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who led us and led America to its greater purposes. As he said continually to America, I'm only holding you up to what's written on the papers, and he's talking about the Constitution, that today they're trying to change who he was, and they're trying to take his narrative. Yeah. But you can't take this as a Christian minister mm-hmm. who loved God, and his daughter runs the King Foundation mm-hmm. today, and we've had some segments of her, you know, on. But this is an amazing man. I mean, I can't wait to get a chance to meet him in the heavenlies. Yes. But he stood up against this huge, huge tide of hate, and he did it in love. And what he said specifically, as he's quoting continually, is that hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. And darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that.
That's right.
I mean, you think about that. Isn't that amazing? In other words, that means the church is the one that makes the difference. Mm-hmm. So people were saying that Dr. King was a communism. Well, guess what? He wasn't a communist empathizer. He was a human empathizer. All humans matter, no matter what political government they're under. He loved God and he loved man, and he let other people do the very same thing. That's what we should do. You're not a, mm-hmm. God's not a party. God's not. They asked, I remember when Joshua was coming in, I believe it was, to come conquer a city, and he saw the angel appear, and he asked the angel, whose side are you on? And the angel's like, God's
side.
I'm sorry, did you think I was a political party or something? Yeah.
It makes me think about the very 10 rules that he had all of those that walked with him to come in agreement. It's just like, and one of the 10
the
rules.
The 10 rules. The 10 commitments.
The 10 commitments. Mm-hmm. One of the very things that was within those 10 commitments was the fact that you had to spend time understanding and reading the very teachings of Jesus Christ.
You had to abide.
You're right. You had to be abider with him. Yeah. And that just sets the stage that Dr. Martin Luther King is not what so many people are saying that he was.
No. Communism is about, you know, tyrannical type leadership, that type of thing. As a matter of fact, here is Dr. King in his own words, what he thinks about communism. Remember, socialism and Marxism is nothing but a doorway to communism. Take a look.
And that so happens that communism is a system that I disagree with philosophically. I would not prefer to live under a communist system. I happen to feel that the great moments of history have been those moments when individuals have been left free to think and to act. And I feel that communism often stands in the way of certain First Amendment privileges that we have in America, for instance, that I just couldn't adjust to.
So there he is in his own words.
Pretty straightforward.
It's not him. It's not. I mean, he's a Christian. A Christian is not going to say, I'd like to replace God with government. Mm-hmm. I mean, a backslidden Christian, you know, might for a while and then beg, God, please pull me up from under this tyrant.
Made a mistake.
You know, but there, you know, Christian's not going to do that. They're not going to pull themselves out from under God. But different leaderships over different Christians around the world. But there's Dr. King in his own words. And he actually was activating society and not to be idle and to begin to listen and abide with God, and let's begin to stand up in love and watch what happens. And it shifted a whole nation because he stood, you know, for righteousness in the context of that. And so many people said, you know, he was called to civil rights, but his own daughter, Dr. Bernice King, she said, she's the one that runs the King Center today, that he had a spiritual call on his life, like any minister would, but his assignment was to civil rights. And that's us today. We're all called by the Lord to do what he says in his word. But socialism produces idleness. I mean, when somebody else is going to pay your bills, and it's sort of like, you know, a 40-year-old teenager living in your house. You know, I mean, dude, you're drawing. Go Social Security. It's time for you to get the job. I know. And so socialism begins to happen where people say, you know, hey, wait a minute. I don't have to work so hard. Did you know God's word talks about that? Mm-hmm. He talks about that in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 6. Can you read that?
Yeah.
Read that for us there?
He says, in the name of the Lord Jesus mm-hmm. Christ, we command you, brothers and sisters, to keep away from every believer who is idle and disruptive and does not live according to the teaching that you received from us.
Wait a minute. So then believers can embrace socialism. So just because you actually embrace a not so wise form of government doesn't mean you're not a believer. But he's saying stay away from that whole situation. Doesn't mean they're not a Christian. It doesn't mean they're not a believer, but they're about to go into some tough times in their nation because they embraced.
That's something you want to do.
Yeah, because a lot of people go, well, they're not a Christian. It's like, no, they're just not, don't have a biblical worldview, and they have not yet been discipled. That's what we're always talking about. Get discipled because you'll suffer for not being discipled. Okay.
For you yourselves know how you ought to follow our example. We were not idle when we were with you, nor did we eat anyone's food without paying for it.
So how often do you hear people, you know, not even think about it? The biggest number of people, and I totally understand, I'm not saying anything negative about it at all, because any of us could be under the weather and going through a difficult time and we need help, and that's what, you know, the SNAP program, the food support program, food stamps, we call it. But we have the highest number ever in the history of America on the food subsidy right now. And the welfare program, it doesn't promote work. It doesn't promote family, which means whoever's promoting that welfare program doesn't care about you, doesn't care about the family, doesn't care about your marriage. You know, in law enforcement, I found out when I was going to different homes that people would tell me if I got married, if I married the father of my children, then I would lose my house and I would lose my support. You know, man, we're sorry for anything that we ever allowed the government to do that to you. You should marry, you should have your family. And we should not hold back help from you. Mm-hmm. But the government did that. That began and we spent over, I think it was like $2 trillion in the programs like that so far.
Wow.
Since 1968 or something of that nature. And so you're supposed to participate. But the welfare program is set up in such a way that promotes almost a socialistic viewpoint of idleness. It's like, I can't work. If I work, I lose money. You know, people who are on Social Security, they go, I can't make over this amount of money because I'll lose my Social Security. It's like, we got to quit punishing people for not being socialists, because if we keep punishing them, then we'll be socialists.
Yeah.
And so he's saying about, you know, I didn't even eat food that I didn't work for. It doesn't mean you can necessarily get paid for what you're doing, but you can work. I mean, one spouse in your family may work, but you're working, or you may have a whole crew of you guys that are together and you have a business and y'all rotate in and out on that business. It's not about just, you know, necessarily earning money as much as it means going out in the backfield and plowing the field and growing some beans. You know, they weren't talking. It wasn't a McDonald's around there. Yeah. I mean, nothing against people who work at McDonald's. It wasn't a McDonald's around in the society that we have today. It was about going out, slopping the hogs, milking the cows. And he's going like, don't be idle. Get busy with that, right?
Yeah.
I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and we're so glad that you've joined us. Don't forget you can join us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Download our app and sign up for our newsletter, The Torch,
at vfnkb.com.
I've enjoyed our time together. God bless.